Good afternoon. It is 2 p.m. We are here today, July 18, 2019, in the OPA hearing room, Suite 907 of DNA Building in Hagatna, Guam, for the motion hearing of OPA PA 19-005, Take Care Insurance Company, Inc. versus the Department of Administration. Presiding over the hearing today is Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jared Hernandez and Tirza Bagana. Will appellant Take Care please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Louis Yanza for the appellant, Take Care Insurance Company, Inc., with my representative, Mr. Arvin Loho, who is seated behind me.
Could he sit next to you because we need one more chair in the back?
Sure.
So there you go. Okay. Can I have his name again, please?
Arvin Loho, L-O-J-O.
Arvin Loho. And what's his position at Take Care?
I'm the health plan administrator, thank you.
Thank you very much. You may proceed.
Will purchasing agency DOA please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Shannon Taito, Assistant Deputy Attorney General for the purchasing agency, and with me is Joseph Peretz, Assistant Attorney General, and Janice Camacho, Assistant Attorney General.
Thank you. We may proceed.
All right, so the first order of business today is essentially kind of an inquiry, and I know that the purchasing agency has filed two declarations of substantial interest. The first was on June the 28th of 2019. After that, the appellant filed using our general appeal forms. A document, and I just want to clarify, Mr. Yanza, if that's a separate appeal or if that was the appellant's response to the government's June 28, 2019 declaration of substantial interest.
That would be a response, Your Honor. I just used the OPA's forms.
Okay, Mr. Camacho, please. All right, I'm just trying to verify that. So we,
Mr. Camacho.
We did not, that's what we thought. By its content, that's what it looked like. So. That's why we did not treat it as a separate appeal.
Sure, thank you.
All right. For further clarification on the record, now that, if you're sitting here in the audience and you're wondering, oh, there was a first one, yes, there was, which the OPA denied subsequently thereafter, sua sponte. That means we're acting on our own because it was procedurally defective. The government then corrected that procedural defect, and they filed their second notice of substantial interest on July the 11th of 2019. And Mr. Yanza, just for the record, and then you filed a second document on July the 12th, 2019, using once again the our general appeal forms. Now, is that your client's response to the July 11th, 2019 notice of substantial interest?
That's correct.
All right, so that's how we're going to treat those, not as a separate appeal, because we gave you, we gave the appellant until I believe it was Tuesday, July the 16th, to file a reply, and definitely your July 12th filing complies with that timeline. Okay. So, our order of march today, or this afternoon, is we're going to talk about, or we're going to give the floor to the purchasing agency to argue their declaration of substantial interest. Just like any other motion hearing, Ms. Brianza, after that, you're going to have the floor to give any opposition you have, and because this is the purchasing agency's notice of substantial interest, they will have the opportunity to reply. Are there going to be any witnesses at this proceeding?
No, Mr. Camacho.
Okay, look behind you. No, don't say no. I have both parties. And if anybody is there that you just might, in the back of your mind, think you might call as a witness, please tell me now. Otherwise, we're going to have an issue. Okay?
No, sir.
No, Mr. Yanza?
I don't think so, Bob.
Just Mr. Camacho is fine.
Okay. Sorry. I spent much time in court.
So do I. So do I. Okay. So, all right, Ms. Taitno, the purchasing agency has its floor. on the July 11, 2019 notice of substantial interest.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho, for the opportunity to present the government's determination of substantial government interest. 5 GCA 5425 allows the procurement process to proceed during the protest period upon a written determination that award of the contract without delay is necessary to protect the government's substantial interest. This determination should be made by the chief procurement officer, which we submitted in consultation with the Department of Administration, which is the purchasing agency in this procurement, and the agency's concurrence. At this stage, since there is a protest before the public auditor, we just now need the public auditor's confirmation that there is a substantial government interest. Rather than reread our declaration, I'm just going to respond to Mr. Yanza and take CARE's comments for reply to the government's determination of substantial government interest. But before I do that, I just want to again note for the record that this procurement is to provide health insurance coverage to government employees, retirees, their families, and foster children, and is mandated by law, and impacts approximately 13,000 current enrollees. The current contract will expire September 30, and the protest by Take Care stems from the requirement of Public Law 35-2, which requires the government to only consider carriers that have all hospitals in their network provider agreement. Take Care's inability to negotiate a provider agreement with GRNC does not meet the statutory requirements of the protest. In Take Care's reply to our determination of substantial government interest, they mention a burden, that the government hasn't met its burden, but there's nothing in 5425 that sets forth a burden. Rather, I would submit that 5245 provides guidance in reviewing written determinations, which is what the government submitted in this case. And it states there that written determinations are final and conclusive unless they are clearly erroneous, arbitrary, capricious, or contrary to law. None of those are the case in this determination made by the government.
What was the second statute you cited?
I'm sorry, I misspoke with the first statute, and that may be the confusion, but with regard to guidance on reviewing written determinations, it's 5 GCA 5245. And
thank
then,
you.
So in Take Care's response to our redetermination, they say that DOA's assertions are uncertain. However, based on past experience, as we had to do a rollover last year, the government has realized that we have not been able to achieve a desirable plan for our members, let alone what the negotiating team is mandated by law in Public Law 3483 to acquire the most economical and beneficial plan. And now we have a new mandate, which is Public Law 35-2. Take Care submits that it appears that the government may have an option with a rollover. And so in their reply, they talk about in comment one and comment two, rollover and contract language improvements. But I would submit that rollover eliminates competition fostered through the procurement process. Rollover limits negotiations, in this case, to potentially one, maybe two carriers. The RFP sets forth what the government's request for services would be and the terms required to provide the service. And interested offerors can then submit proposals based on RFP and compete for the contract. That is effectively reduced or challenged within a rollover process. Take Care's comment to number three of our determination, which is avoiding an unattractive market. prior to this protest, we had offerors, new offerors, that were interested in this current RFP. Public Law 35-2 is now law, and Take Care Challenges seeks to challenge the law. And I think that that can proceed without holding up this procurement process for a one-year contract for essential services. Their comment to number 4, which is opting out, I mean, carriers can opt out, they could probably price out because we can no longer afford them, or they can no longer qualify to provide health services to the government. What we submit is that the procurement process provides a more stable outcome than a rollover. And with respect to item 5 in our determination and lowest overall rates, they cite Bill 334 or Public Law 334, and I'm not sure what that is, but I would note that historically, the negotiating team has selected the most economical and beneficial plans, as dictated in the solicitation that they developed. There has been prior criticism of a governor not selecting the lowest cost option, but the claims are not entirely accurate. Again, a competitive RFP process can maximize the purchasing value of public funds and the cost of healthcare to the member, employees, and retirees. Item 6 discusses open enrollment and the need to have sufficient time period to allow members to enroll in plans. Typically, every RFP period, the government allots at least a month, or maybe just a month, in the procurement schedule for open enrollment. But the reality of the procurement process has unfortunately resulted in a shorter period. And it was never intended by the government, but it is just how it happens at the end of the procurement process. The section cited by Take Care under the open enrollment comment expire at the end of this fiscal year, which is 9/30, and will no longer be available to the government and the members. This protest does not affect the current contract period, and we can use the existing contract to facilitate new enrollees, but come September 30, that may not be available to the government if we're not able to move forward in this procurement process. Although we hope that this is resolved in a timely fashion, in a timely manner, I should say, the reality is the government needs at least 1 month to go through this procurement process. Currently, hearings are scheduled in August, and there is a motion to continue it to a later date in August. And more importantly, the contract expires September 30, so we really need to get this RFP moving. With respect to comment 7, again, Public Law 35-2 is a mandate for DOA to implement, and we cannot cure Take Care's grievance, and neither for that matter the public auditor, as the procurement law in 5 GCA 5251 says that remedies prior to an award, which is the case here, when there is a violation of law, the remedy would be to cancel the RFP or revise the RFP. But here there is no violation of law. It's merely compliance with the law. So we're not able to cancel the RFP or revise the RFP to comply with the law as it currently complies with the law. I'm sorry, I think that's 5 GCA 5451. I apologize. As for comment 8 and information about the judicial branch, being part of the new fiscal year contract for health insurance coverage, that was information provided to DOA, and that's why it's submitted in the Declaration for Substantial Government Interests. Should they, in fact, be a part of the new contract, this would have an impact on negotiated rates, and again, another reason why this procurement should move forward rather than just go over. As to comments 9 and 10, loss ratio impact and no guarantee to control costs, the Department of Administration maintains its position. A rollover would make it harder to negotiate, especially if forced to roll over. Allowing a competitive RFP process to proceed would enable the government to negotiate changes to health plans and potentially reduce costs to not just the government, but to the members again. Number 11 is economical and beneficial legislation. I would argue that a rollover is inconsistent with the mandate of Public Law 34-83. In 3483, the negotiating team is mandated to submit the most economical and beneficial plan to the governor. And in order to do that, the negotiating team has to evaluate and rank solicited proposals to determine the lowest cost option between an exclusive carrier proposal or a non-exclusive multiple carrier proposal. The rollover will achieve the mandate of 3483. Take care's comments to number 12, which is a non-participating provider, higher provider, results in higher costs. Again, the assertions made in the determination for substantial government interest is based on assertions received by DOA from members in health insurance plans. In the current health insurance plans. Item 13 in the written determination and take care's comments to the receipt of proposal submission. With this new RFP, we have received new offers and proposals, and we actually anticipate more offers to be submitted as the deadline to submit has not lapsed. So this is another reason that we ask that you confirm our determination of substantial government interest so we could realize a possibly better plan for government members. And finally, the last item is the request for a hearing. I would submit the timing is crucial here. Again, our contract expires September 30th. The government needs at least 1 month to complete this procurement process. And we would also ask for enough time to allow government members to enroll in the plans that they feel is more suitable to their needs. Rollover option is not automatic. The government would have to request it. And at this time, the government has determined that proceeding with the RFP is better for its employees, retirees, and their families, and consistent with Guam law than proceeding with a rollover. Take care's arguments are outside the procurement law and can proceed without delaying this RFP. This is an annual issuance mandated by law. Take care in its reply to our written determinations cites testimony concerning Bill 2134 by DOA in opposition to the legislation that would require GRMC to be an in-network provider. But that was submitted before the laws were amended and is now being used against DOA out of context to say that we cannot implement 35-2. 35-2 is the law, and the government is merely complying with the law. The RFP, again, is to provide health insurance coverage to approximately 13,000 members beginning October 1st. And to proceed without delay is necessary to protect the substantial interests of the government. The public auditor should confirm the government's determination of substantial government interests and not delay this RFP any further. Thank you.
Just a couple of questions. So let's say this rollover occurred.
Yes.
Who would be providing the service?
So it would be the current carriers if they qualify under the new law.
And who are the current carriers?
The current carriers are SelectCare and TakeCare.
So just those two?
Yes.
And, but that's not a given. They would still have to qualify under the new law.
Yes.
And then, in the last rollover, which occurred September 30 of 2018, did insurance prices go up or down?
They stayed the same.
So they stayed the same.
Well, there was a slight adjustment in one of the carriers due to the fact that their QC had expired, so they had to negotiate an increase to accommodate for that. So there was an increase with one of the carriers. And I can't say as to how how the final numbers for the members, whether there was an increase or there may have been a slight increase depending on the plan. But I'm sorry, you were going to ask me a question.
Which carrier increased their prices?
Select carrier.
And in your opinion, is it possible to actually extend the existing contracts past September the 30th of 2019?
There is a provision in the 2018 contract where the carriers did sign off on that allows at least a 90-day rollover. But that was intended in the event any RFP, for example, this RFP, is not able to award a contract to the most economical and beneficial, and then we have to redo the RFP. It gives the government time.
In the contract, where's that provision?
I believe it's actually cited in Take Care's papers. I'm sorry.
Section 2.3.
Yes, 2.3. It's in the original FY 2018 contract, the rollover contract. Made some changes to the FY 2018 contract, but everything else that was not amended remained the same, including section 2.3.
Thank you. Mr. Yanza, you have the floor on behalf of your client.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. First of all, it's still our position that DOA has not met their burden of proof in determining that there is a substantial interest in moving forward. And they have not explained why it's necessary without delay. They cite 5245 for the proposition that any determination that they make is final. And they seem to be trying to incorporate 5245 with section 5425. But if you read 5425's statute, it says this: the determination is required by all these other sections. And it doesn't cite 5425. Of this chapter are final and conclusive. But never does this statute incorporate 5425. It talks about other sections, but not 5425. And 5425 specifically states that in the event there is a timely protest, everything is stayed until the government makes a substantial interest and we have to move forward without further delay. And still, they have not met that burden. If we analyze their replies or their comments to Take Care's comments, it's all inconclusive, it's all speculation. They're saying that we need to move forward because these enrollees with their dependents and their families and retirees and foster children will lose coverage. Well, that's not exactly true, Mr. Camacho. There's a rollover provision, section 2.3, that guarantees that everyone will be covered. No one's gonna lose their coverage, no one's gonna lose their job, there's no bridge collapsing, and every case that discusses the substantial interest issue, they've always said there has to be an emergency. This is not an emergency. They just want to move forward. That's all they want to do. But it's not an emergency. And if you look at the rollover contract, on average, healthcare costs increased roughly about 5% per year. But Select Take Care has not increased its rates. Only Select Care has, and Select Care adjusted its rates by 5% due to the expiration of its qualifying certificate and their GRT abatement. But that's the only increase. Otherwise, all the premiums have remained the same, all the rates have remained the same. So they can't say that this rollover contract is going to increase in higher rates, because it hasn't. There's only been one slight increase, and that was last year. And if they're talking about the contract language improvements or negotiations and how they're unable to obtain benefits to their advantage, Select Care and Take Care has always been amenable to discussions with DOA. And I think they failed to cite that. Whenever they've asked for adjustments in FY 2018 contract, Take Care has always been amenable to discussions. There's always been some give and take, but there's always discussions between the parties. Then they talk about the unattractive market. Again, you know, that's all speculation. I think my comments, Mr. Camacho, in my response, DOA has not adequately responded to my comments in my response. But most importantly, I want to address the existing benefits and rates to the Guam's enrollees. We want to make this clear that Daycare is willing to extend its current benefits, rates, and participate in an open enrollment for all employees, retirees, foster children, and their dependents. And in the event that Select Care is unwilling to extend those current benefits, then take care of them. We can extend those benefits. And in fact, if GovWOM will realize more savings if members from Select Care switches to Take Care, because Take Care's rates were approximately roughly about 25% less than Select Care's rates. Going now to PL 35-2. Point number 7. The problem is that Take Care cannot be an actual offer or qualified offer because PL 35-2 has improperly granted a private entity, such as GRMC, the unilateral right to refuse for any reason or for no reason at all to agree with Take Care to reach an agreement. And that's the problem with this improper delegation of authority. They've given this private entity the right, absolute right, to determine who can be a qualified offer. And in doing so, Select Care becomes the only qualified offer, Take Care doesn't. And what the legislature failed to do was provide some form of standards in making GRMC agree to an agreement with another health insurer. For example, the legislature should have said, okay, GRMC, you can make the decision who can be a qualified offer, but here are some standards. Make sure the qualified offer or the offeror has a certificate of authority, has enough capitalization, has a business license, has bonding, has a certificate of good standing. There's no claims. How much claims do they have? Are those claims paid? Are those outstanding claims not paid, and how much are they? But they didn't. What the legislature did was give GRMC the absolute right to make arbitrary and capricious decisions on who can be a qualified offer. And on top of that, the legislature failed to provide some procedural mechanism to review GRMC's decisions. So if Take Care can't be a qualified offer, the legislature should have given DOA the right to review and ask, okay, GRMC, why is Take Care not a qualified offer? And the GRMC would just say, well, because you know what? We asked for commercial and federal lines, want them to pay for all these outstanding claims that has not been paid but are stale, and we wanted to charge them higher rates. Then DOA could have said, no, that's not how to do it. You're treating Take Care wrongfully, and you're discriminating against them, and you're not treating Take Care the same as you did with Select Care. And that's what is wrong with Public Law 35-2. And this same point was raised by the same procuring agency several years ago, even by Select Care. They made these same complaints years ago when former Senator B.J. Cruz attempted to have the hospital in as part of the government's contract. And this was shot down, obviously, because there was a lot of uproar about how this would give GRMC this sovereign power to determine who can be a qualified offer. And that's what we have here now. The very same concern that DOA has raised, the very same concern that we have raised and Select Care has raised, is now reared its ugly head here, because now only Select Care can be a qualified offer, not Take Care. I want to go back also to issue of PL 35 dash, I'm sorry. Go back to my point number 7, Mr. Camacho. And I wanted to emphasize how Public Law 35-2 is the textbook case of improper delegation of executive and police legislative and police power, because it allows a private entity such as GRMC to determine what other private entities can participate and become ultimately a qualified offeror. And there are several factors that courts have used in looking at procurement cases to determine whether or not it is an improper delegation. First, are the private delegate's actions subject to meaningful review by a state agency or a branch of state government? Obviously, no. The legislature provides no meaningful review for DOA or Gov1 to review the delegate's decisions in rejecting an agreement with Take Care. Are the persons affected by the private delegate's actions adequately represented in the decision-making process? No. The only one who makes a decision in this case is GRMC, Take Care, Select Care, Netcare, Aetna. All these other health insurers has no part in the decision-making process. Is the private delegate's power limited to making rules, or does the delegate also apply the law to particular individuals? Yes, we have given GRMC the right to implement its own rules without any meaningful review. What are those rules? They've imposed conditions. Take Care. Not only do we want your Gov1 lines, we want your federal lines and your commercial lines. Take Care. Oh, by the way, we have stealth claims that hasn't been paid, but we want you to pay for that. It's about $2 million to pay for that, in which we have no obligation to pay. And another condition or another rule that GRMC implemented is that we're not going to allow you to have your Netcare lease option implemented. You need to have a direct agreement with GRMC. Does the private delegate have a pecuniary or other personal interest that conflicts with its public function? Yes. GRMC has reared its ugly head by requiring Take Care to not only have its Gov1 lines, but have its federal and commercial lines access to GRMC for the simple reason that the more members who receive medical service at GRMC means more money for GRMC. What does that mean? It violates our three bedrock requirements for procurement laws. One is the equal treatment of offerors, maximizing public funds, and and we're not fostering broad-based competition. Okay, so if a healthcare insurer decides not to agree with GRMC's unreasonable bans, then GRMC will say, well, then I'm sorry, you can no longer be a qualified offer. So now what have we done? We've destroyed a broad-based competition. We've now allowed maybe one or just two. By allowing only one qualified offeror to participate in the RFP process, now we've, instead of maximizing public funds, we've decreased public funds, decreased the use of public funds, because that one qualified offeror will not have the incentive to lower his or her rates, because what? There's no competition. Which goes into our third bedrock requirement. We need to foster broad-based competition, and we haven't done that. Is the delegation narrow in duration? No. So long, public law has no duration. It has given GRMC the endless right to arbitrarily determine who can be a qualified offer. And lastly, has the legislature provided sufficient standards to guide the private delegate in its work? No. Again, they just said, GRMC, you're going to be in the Gov1's RFP process, and you make the decision. So these are the six standards, Ms. Camacho, that courts have used in determining whether or not there's improper delegation of authority. And I think, that being said, the government has not met its burden in making this determination of substantial interest. And as you point out, Mr. Camacho, what prevents the government from having a rollover contract? Nothing. We can still have a rollover contract. And in fact, if we have a rollover contract, it would maximize public funds because the rates still stay the same.
Well, my question about that, let's say a rollover does occur and they have to comply with this law and it takes effect, would take care of be disqualified if they applied that that law to the rollover?
Well, you know what? But that's a good question, and I've thought about this, Ms. Camacho, and through endless sleepless nights. You know, it's a difficult question, and we think we can still meet Public Law 35-2 because we don't need to have a direct contract with GRMC. Nothing in the law says you must have a direct contract. We can have our patients, our enrollees, go to GRMC, receive medical treatment, and then the enrollee or the patient would receive a bill, and then we would reimburse that bill to the patient or pay GRMC directly. But GRMC...
But wouldn't you have to have an agreement to pay them directly?
No, you don't have to, so long as we have the rates applied. But GRMC doesn't want us to do that. They want a direct agreement with GRMC for what? For higher rates. In fact, GRMC has demanded higher rates than its rates with SelectCare. So we have arbitrary decision right there off the bat.
But the decision maker is actually the government, is that right? As to whether or not this law would apply to take care. And in the event that they say that the law applies, sorry, take care, you're not going to be, you're disqualified from the rollover, what would then happen to take care's insured?
That's just it. They would have to have another RFP. I mean, we have a SelectCare out there, right?
Well, if there's a rollover, wouldn't they all have to go to SelectCare if they remain the only qualified rollover provider?
I'm sorry, if there is a rollover, and
if there is a rollover, TakeCare gets disqualified, or the government's position is TakeCare is disqualified, we're not going to let you proceed with the rollover. I know you would fight that. I know TakeCare would fight that to the very end legally, but in the interim, what would happen to TakeCare as insured?
I don't know. That's a good question.
How many of that 30,000 that Ms. Titino cited is the number of people insured by this particular contract are insured by TakeCare?
It's about 16,000.
So sorry, about half, a little over half, perhaps.
There's two carriers, right, that's supplying health coverage for the 16,000 employees and their dependents. But... I don't know what SelectCare's position is, because SelectCare would then have to extend those benefits to take care of enrollees, and I don't know what SelectCare's position is.
But if that happened,
if that happens, then
and the rates were similar to the way they are
now, the rates are going
to
be
higher. You're saying that half of WOM's insured would likely have to pay a higher rate if take care is insured would have to go to SelectCare.
About 25% more. Okay. And then the end result of that. The burden on the taxpayers, because not only are we now paying for some higher rates at GRMC, but now they're also paying for higher premiums with SelectCare. Because in the end, it's GRMC's rates that's going to be determined dispositive, because GRMC, which is a private entity, has no entity that can review their own rates. It's a private entity, and they can charge their own rates and change the rate to the next day. That has to be pointed out, Mr. Camacho.
Did you have anything else?
No, I do not.
Thank you. Ms. Titino, you have the floor for any rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. I think based on the last conversation, it just shows our point to have a competitive process so that we can have these different offers submit proposals so that they can be ranked against each other and evaluated and negotiated so that the government can try and get a healthcare plan at a rate that they deem is economical and beneficial to its constituents. Secondly, TakeCare said that they think that they could qualify under Public Law 35-2, and so if that's the case, we encourage them to submit a proposal for this RFP and have it evaluated and ranked to determine whether it qualifies under 35-2. Take Care talks about...
Well, let's stop there for just a second. Now,
sure.
To keep an open mind, I really try not to delve into the facts too much before the hearing in the matter, but at what stage had the government gotten before the protest was filed and the automatic stay was applied? I know you said that it would take you about a month to award, but at what stage were you at? Had the potential offerors submitted their proposals or not?
Yes, so the protest was filed the day of the deadline at 11 a.m. So, and I believe the deadline was at the end of the day, maybe 4 or 5 o'clock. So if the stay is lifted, we would complete that process. In other words, allow for the probably amend the RFP to give a new deadline to allow the other offerors to submit their proposals in a timely fashion.
It's my understanding then that did you receive any proposals at all? Or?
Yes, I believe at least one, if not more.
Okay. But that deadline would have to be extended.
Yes, to allow the other offers to submit. Right.
Sorry to interrupt you, I had to ask that question.
That's okay.
Before I forget it, so please proceed.
Thank you. Take Care says that DOA has not met its burden of proof. Again, there's nothing in 5425 that establishes a burden for a substantial government interest determination. However, I did submit 5 GCA 5245 as guidance to the public auditor in reviewing our substantial government interest and determining whether it should be confirmed. I would just like also to point out again, if I didn't mention it earlier, that this rollover is not automatic. If you look at the contract provision, which was submitted by Take Care as an exhibit to its reply to our substantial government interest, I believe it's section... sorry, I just had it. Section 2.13, regarding the rollover provision, it's the government of Guam that can invoke that. And the government has determined at this stage in the procurement process that it's more beneficial to its members to proceed with the RFP rather than a rollover. We've done a rollover last year, and considering the interest in this year's RFP, we think it would be beneficial to proceed without delay with the current RFP. Take Care says this is not an emergency. The government has never said this is an emergency. That's not the standard for a substantial government interest determination. The standard is that award of the contract without delay is necessary to protect substantial interest. Again, this is a mandated RFP that would provide health insurance coverage to Government of Guam employees, retirees, and their families. The contract expires September 30, and we would need coverage 10-1. And we would like to be able to offer coverage that was the outcome of a competitive process and not a rollover process. We think the rollover could result in higher rates versus a competitive scenario that an RFP would provide. And contract negotiations is easier to achieve through a competitive process rather than a rollover process. And in a rollover process, the government is almost forced into what the carrier is offering because we would need coverage. While we appreciate Take Care's offer to provide coverage in a rollover contract, we still have to deal with the issue of public law 35-2 issue, as was discussed earlier, and whether they would be eligible to contract with the government. TakeCare's arguments regarding GRMC, Mr. Camacho, is between two private entities for which the government is not a party to. And so we submit it's outside the procurement process and therefore shouldn't delay this RFP from going forward. Public law 35-2, again, is law. DOA, the negotiating team, the government of Guam, we're just the executing agency. We are required to comply with 35-2. And basically, that's my response to his response to my earlier presentation and request that the public auditor confirm our determination of substantial government interest.
Thank you. I'm going to have to take this issue under advisement, and I will try very hard.
Can I just make one clarification of what I said?
Please.
Okay. You know, in my response to your question whether or not we can still provide coverage, even though we don't have a direct provider services agreement with GRMC, it was our position that we can. But you know, GRMC said no. You're going to have a direct provider service agreement directly with GRMC before you even become a qualified offer. So I just want to make that point of clarification.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just to remind the parties that Monday is a holiday. Although I am one that for many, many years has worked both days of the weekend, sadly, this is the one day that my office is in the GCIC building, and I am unable to work on Sunday as it is Liberation Day, and this is where I must cede my duties to the masses of Guam who will assemble to watch the Liberation Day parade. I literally find it very hard to get to my office on that particular day. So, saying that, I will still try to get the decision out by hopefully mid next week on the substantial interest determination. All right. The next order of business is the government's motion to dismiss.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. I will be speaking on behalf of the government.
Ms. Titano, and does any, before we proceed, I know we've been going on for almost an hour. Would the parties like a break before we proceed?
I don't need a break since it's Ms. Camacho, but
I'm
I don't
fine.
Know about
I'm fine.
Mr.
Yan. Yeah,
I'm fine.
All
right,
I'm fine
fine
to proceed.
So, Ms. Camacho, the floor is yours on behalf of the purchasing agency on its motion to dismiss.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho, for giving us the opportunity to provide argument on our motion to dismiss. We strongly believe this case cannot survive a jurisdictional challenge, in fact, a basic jurisdictional challenge. This motion to dismiss stems from Appellant TakeCare's protest filed with DOA on May 3rd, 2019. The purpose of this motion is to simply request that the OPA dismiss this action in its entirety, as it is without jurisdiction to hear and decide the merits of this matter. In the simplest terms, this case is not properly before this administrative body, as the statute of limitations and standing issues are jurisdiction in nature and cannot be waived. First, we assert this appeal should be dismissed because TakeCare is ineligible to protest this procurement. It's not an actual prospective bidder, offeror, or contractor as delineated by Title V GCA, Section 5425. In the case at bar, TakeCare has not been able to secure an agreement with GRMC that would qualify TakeCare as coming within one of those statutorily designated categories, as I just mentioned. Second, in our motion, we assert this appeal should be dismissed because TakeCare is not aggrieved. Again, Title V, GCA, Section 5425A is relevant and is tricky when an actual or prospective bidder, offeror, or contractor is aggrieved. And I emphasize, Mr. Camacho, aggrieved. In connection with method of source selection, solicitation, or award of contract, here in the present case, TakeCare was unable to secure a contract with GRMC, as we all know, or make it past negotiations, and therefore would never have been able or eligible to submit a proposal under the RFP, under the terms of the RFP. Next, even if TakeCare qualified as an actual or prospective bidder, offeror, or contractor who was aggrieved, still Take Care filed its protest well beyond the statute of limitations, the 14-day period. Again, Title V GCA Section 5425A is triggered and relevant when conducting a timeliness analysis. This is all reflected in our brief. Section 5425A provides that a protest be submitted within 14 days from when an aggrieved knows or should know of the facts giving rise to a protest. In the matter at bar, the RFP was published on April 1st, 2019 in a newspaper of general circulation. As evidenced by the procurement record, and I direct you, Ms. Pronto, to Bates stamp, to the procurement record, Bates stamp 000083, filed on May 31st, 2019 by the purchasing agency. Therefore, we maintain April 1st, 2019 is the date when Take Care should have known it was aggrieved, and not May 3rd and not May 1st, but rather April 1st. In fact, this administrative body has established prior precedent relative to this issue of notice. We direct you to a decision captioned in the appeal of Morco Equipment LLC, OPA 13-015, issued on January 24, 2014, where this administrative body found that a protester was considered to know or should have known or should know about an award based upon the purchasing agency issuing a press release. Morco is analogous to the extent that notice is triggered by way of publication, and that's our position. In short, if Take Care did not know firsthand about the RFP, then it should have known by way of that publication, the publication on April 1st, 2019. We direct you to the objective notice standards set out by or set forth by Morco. And additionally, we'd like to add that as to Take Care's various constitutional claims and claims of inorganicity of Public Law 35-2, we don't believe these arguments are relevant at this time, as this administrative body must address any jurisdictional issues before it can proceed. And we feel it has a duty even sua sponte to do so, even if we did not bring such claims before you today. Furthermore, and in closing, even if our motion to dismiss is denied, it's crucial or critical to note that any of the remedies sought by Take Care, such as cancellation and reissuance of the RFP, are futile, because we know that we are all unable to alter the requirements set forth in public law or set forth by Public Law 35-2. Therefore, we respectfully, on behalf of DOA, our client, ask that this matter be dismissed in its entirety, and that you take our motion under advisement and act quickly, because as Ms. Titano mentioned, this is quite urgent.
One question for Ms. Camacho. So I know you state that the April 1st, 2019 was the date that the purchasing agency issued the notice of the RFP.
Yes.
Do you have a date where Take Care actually picked up the RFP?
I don't recall the date off the top. I believe, yeah, it was all, we also, so that RFP was also published on our, on DOA's website, but I don't know the exact date that Take Care, but
Take isn't Care, it true that the purchasing agency would have some kind of record as to who
when they
picked
up
an RFP packet, which is standard practice? Is
correct,
that, true?
That is a standard practice,
okay.
But the focus for us, Mr. Camacho, is of course the objective standard, the April 1st date, when they knew or should have known. Excuse me, and it is available in the procurement record, which was filed on May 31st.
All right, you just don't have that date off the top of
our head. We don't have the
all
date
right,
off the top of our head.
That's
and
fine.
We also would like to stress, Mr. Camacho, that we'd like to focus on that April 1st deadline or date, because that's the objective standard that we think is applicable here.
All right, thank you. Mr. Yanzo?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Camacho. Nowhere in the RFP or Public Law 35-2 required that Take Care and have a direct contract with GRMC. Nowhere in Public Law 35-2 or in the RFP required that Take Care have a direct contract with GRMC when the RFP was published. I will make those two points very clear, because we did not need to have a direct contract with GRMC.
Public Law 35-2 and RFP and RFP merely require that GRMC be in the in-network of offers when the offer is submitted in May of 2019. So therefore, Take Care was not required to know on April 1st whether or not GRMC would be in its in-network. More importantly, and most important point is that Take Care did not know GRMC would not be in its in-network until May 1st, 2019, when GRMC informed Netcare that it would not honor Netcare's lease with Take Care. As you may or may not know, Netcare, who's not a qualified offer, who opted out of this RFP process, has a lease with GRMC, and so what it could afford the GRMC services. So what happens is that Netcare would permit other health insurers to access its lease with GRMC and therefore receive the medical services from GRMC. When we could not obtain a direct agreement with GRMC based on GRMC's unreasonable demands as set forth in my previous arguments, we then communicated with Netcare that we're going to use their access, access their net lease. When Netcare informed GRMC, responded on that same day, which is protest exhibit number one, that they will not honor that lease. So we did not know until May 1st that GRMC would not be in that room. And therefore, we filed this protest timely, within 2 days, on May 3rd, 2019. So we're well within the 14-day protest period. So this issue of jurisdiction, that's really a factual issue before the OPA. Then they argue that Take Care could not be a prospective bidder or offer because we didn't have GRMC in the network. Well, our problem with that is that Public Law 35-2 subordinates DOA's decision-making process or procurement process to the whims of GRMC.
I understand that that's the same argument you made previously in the substantial interest.
I'm just going to make one short statement on my previous arguments. Yeah, on this jurisdictional issue, Mr. Camacho, despite the government's narrow assessment of the OPA's jurisdiction, we believe the OPA has the jurisdiction to address all of Take Care's protest issues. As we can see in the the Guam law, the OPA has jurisdiction. The OPA's jurisdiction shall be utilized to promote the integrity of the procurement process and the purposes of Chapter 5. So, what are those three purposes or the bedrock requirements of Chapter 5? Fair and equitable treatment of all offers, maximize the purchasing value of the public funds, and foster broad-based competition. As I said earlier in my earlier arguments and the other issues, we believe that Public Law 35-2 and the RFP violates those three bedrock requirements. Otherwise, I would submit on my opposition, Mr. Camacho.
I'll ask you the same question I asked the government. So, off the top of your head, when did Take Care pick up an RFP packet?
I believe it was April 2nd, 2019. Don't hold me to that, but
I'm going to double check on the procurement records.
Second or third? Okay. I'm pretty certain it's on April 2nd.
Thank you. And Ms. Camacho, is there any rebuttal to Mr. Yanza's opposition?
Mr. Camacho, I would like to turn over the rebuttal to my colleague, Mr. Perez. Would that be okay?
Very well. Mr. Perez, the floor is yours for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. I would just like to keep this brief, as again, our position was stated by Ms. Camacho and on our papers. Again, this administrative body can't ignore the jurisdictional standards set forth in Title V. Mr. Yanza did state correctly that the public auditor's jurisdiction shall be utilized to promote the integrity of the procurement process. The OPA is responsible, and quote, under 5 GCA 5704, that the application or interpretation of the procurement law regulation, again, this is a public law, Mr. Camacho, and the remedy sought by Mr. Yanza and Take Care requires jurisdictional issues that this body does not have. in regards to the timeliness issue, we don't look at take your state of mind as Ms. Camacho stated. We ask that the OPA take a look at the Morco issue. The timeliness analysis is an objective standard. And this is not exactly what happened during failed negotiations. And we would just want to emphasize that this is a negotiation process between two private entities and not necessarily a procurement law or procurement issue, a procurement issue for the OPA to take a look at. And that's it.
Thank you. All right. And the final order of business is, although we didn't really notice it, I was just going to ask the parties, or ask the government if there was any objection to Mr. Yanz's request to continue the formal hearing, which is currently scheduled on August the 12th. And I believe he's asking for a brief extension to August the 22nd.
That's correct, Mr. Mayor.
Correct. Is there any, and since then, I noted that you had filed your opposition to the same, and I believe he filed a reply, so I'm going to, as this is just a request to continue, that has now made its way up to motion status here. Mr. Yanz, it is your motion, so you have the floor to argue.
Your Honor, all I'm asking is for a 10-day extension. I don't think the issues involved in the factual hearing will be complex. In fact, both the OPA and TechCare has stipulated that the most this case will take is 2 days. Okay. Under the assumption that we can stipulate on some facts. And I think we can stipulate on some facts, but that would significantly shorten the time frame for having a factual hearing on this protest. That being said, if we have the hearing on starting August 22nd, assume we end on August 23rd, I don't think the OPA will be required to take a long time in issuing its decision on denying or accepting the protest. So,
okay, what's the basis of your, you said that you had a key witness who'd be off island?
Yeah, Mr. Husslein, the president and CEO of TechCare is off island, and he won't be back in Guam until before 19th or 20th. Now we need 1 day with them just to prepare his testimony.
Couldn't he testify remote?
I guess he can.
Even
always,
through Skype.
I've always frowned upon electronic mass media testimonies, Mr. Camacho. I think the live testimony shows the behavior and I guess the truthfulness of the testifying witness.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
No.
Ms. Feitner?
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. The government's position has to be consistent that we can't afford any further delay. I've been in proceedings before the public auditor where video conference was available to the parties to examine witnesses, and I believe that that could be accommodated in this case. However, if the public auditor confirms our substantial government interest, then we won't oppose any continuing.
Well, of course, the motion would be moot, but what anything else?
That's it, Mr. Camacho. Thank you.
Mr. Yanz, anything in rebuttal?
No, I need Mr. Houseline here, Mr. Camacho. I need for him to testify.
Well, as to the motion to continue the hearing from August the 12th to August the 22nd, I'm going to literally rule from the bench and state that motion is denied. Based on the importance of the contract, and if both the substantial interest request is denied and the motion to dismiss is denied, we're going to need as much time as possible to come to a final decision prior to the September 30th, 2019 rollover date. Hence, that's a basis. My decision is that the delay simply has to be avoided at all costs. And I make that ruling now so that your client and you can make the appropriate preparations to secure his testimony for the hearing. Okay? And I'll put that decision in writing after this this hearing as well. Are there any other matters that we need to take up while we're here?
No, Mr. Camacho.
No? Okay. I will also take up the motion to dismiss or take that under advisement as well. And once again, I will try to issue a decision on the substantial interest and the motion to dismiss sometime next week. Okay. There be no other issues. That watch doesn't work up there, by the way. Where are my fancy German watch? It is 3:06 p.m. And this hearing is concluded. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're off the record.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers.